Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. In this series, we will be talking with organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who are working both to challenge the Trump administration and the circumstances that created it. It can be easy to despair, to feel like trends toward inequality are impossible to stop, to give in to fear over increased racist, sexist, and xenophobic violence. But around the country, people are doing the hard work of fighting back, coming together to plan for what comes next. This series will introduce you to some of them.
Okay, my name is Erin Mahoney, and I'm with National Women's Liberation.
All right. And so National Women's Liberation has called for an interesting set of actions this weekend. Can you talk about the call for a women's strike?
Yes, we have called for a two-day women's strike from January 20th to 21st to coincide with both the inauguration and the Women's March. And it's a strike of both paid and unpaid labor to kind of showcase how women do more than just participate in the workforce. We participate in many aspects of society that go unseen and really make both the home and the workplace run. So it's a call to action for women to withhold both their paid and unpaid labor on January 20th and 21st.
Yeah. And so talk a little bit about how you envision this going. What is the process for people to sort of join the strike?
Sure. Well, we wanted to make this more a real action. We didn't want this to be something that, you know, the left calls and hopes happens. We really wanted to organize and make it real. So we decided to add an aspect of women pledging to strike. And we've had a website, womenstrike.org, that was actually created after our November meeting with everyday women that came to our general meeting. We put this website together very quickly. And women can go to that website and actually add their name and write a few sentences about what they're striking from and why they're striking. And so we've got nearly 5,000 signatures so far, and they're coming in by the hundreds every day, of women signing up to say that they will be striking from doing emotional labor in their household. They'll be striking from their paid job. They'll be striking from fake smiles, from making things run smoothly, from laundry to child care, the whole host of different things that they're striking from. So it's really moving to just see the reasons why people are striking and also the breadth of work that they're striking from.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Of course, the history of calls for women to strike from unpaid work goes back to, among other things, the Wages for Housework movement. Can you talk about how this part of the strike came to be a key demand and how that discussion went?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were building upon what we've seen recently in other countries and also in our own country in the U.S. In 1970, women called a strike for women's equality on Women's Equality Day, August 24th, 1970, where 50,000 women across the country went on strike, both from their paid and unpaid jobs. And I think it makes the point that we do a lot more than just paid labor in this country. And in recent years, we've seen strikes in Iceland, in Argentina, in France, in various parts of Poland, where women have for specific things, like in Poland, striking against the potential ban on abortion, and they actually won that. And in France and Iceland, protesting the wage gap and walking off their job at the part of the day where they stop being paid and then continue to get paid. So I think women have used this tool in a variety of ways, and it's really powerful. And this strike comes out of, you know, women just being so angry and upset that the Donald Trump won this election and really thinking that we need to take bold action to show this administration that women are not going to sit by idly while they dismantle public programs and take us further back. And also making sure that we stay on the offense and that this doesn't turn into a defensive battle, because I think women are frustrated with where we're at right now. You know, we basically have crumbs, and we don't want to fight like hell just to hold onto those crumbs. We want to be on the offense and make sure that we make advances for women, advances that the Democrats could have made. You know, we need things like national free childcare, paid parental leave like they have in other countries, 2 years in these other countries, you know, a minimum $15 an hour for all women, like no exceptions, all sectors of the workforce. We want to save Medicare and expand it to national child care and national health care. We don't want to be picking up the slack for programs that are being privatized by the Republicans. You know, oftentimes when things are no longer universal, they're pushed back onto the family. And that is code for women doing this work unpaid. And so I think a big part of this strike is showing that we know what our unpaid labor is, and we're not doing any more of it. And we're demanding advances so that we don't have to do it anymore. These should be universal programs that corporations pay into and take them off the backs of women.
And so these are some of the demands of the, you went through some of the demands of the women's strike, but what are some other things that are on the list?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been quite an array of things. I mean, people have talked about safety, just being able to walk down the street safely without having to worry about assaults. Other women have talked about, you know, not having to deal with street harassment. Fake smiles have been a demand, which had a lot of resonance, which we wasn't expecting to hit so close to home for so many women. I think, you know, an end to racism and bigotry of all sorts. Yes, I mean, women have been on our website, you know, the testimonies are really beautiful, really deep parts of women's lives, speaking openly, saying, like, we're not going to take this anymore, and we're joining the movement in droves. I think that was another thing that really struck us. Like, our November meeting was pretty much like a week after the election, and we had hundreds and hundreds of women show up to our, what was a monthly meeting? It normally has like 50 people at it. We had nearly 800 women. Yeah. I mean, so many that they couldn't fit in our space, and were lined up around the block. So I think, you know, from that, we really thought we needed to take bold action. And then in doing so, we've just heard such a wide range of testimonies of why women are getting involved in the movement. And it's been kind of a learning process for us, too, in terms of expanding our work and what the movement should be. It's giving women a direct voice to that, which I think has been pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, there's been sort of debates within feminism in recent years about sort of, is the demand coming from sort of from below and valuing all women's labor, or is it about sort of shattering the glass ceiling for women at the top? And so, you know, I was really struck by this, which seems to be really coming from that kind of labor feminism angle.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we look back at the history of the feminist movement, probably all sectors of the left, there's some places where the movement's been co-opted, I would say. You know, I do think that, like, it's important to have equality in the workplace, but I think the feminist movement has had a pretty wide breadth. It's just elements of it that have been co-opted and kind of taken within the corporate capitalist model. You know, I mean, there are good parts of the book leaned in, but I wouldn't call that necessarily coming from the feminist movement. You know, I do think that the feminist movement's demands have always included national child care. It was one of now the National Organization for Women's First demands, but it's not the demand that's gotten the most attention or perhaps the most traction in this country, because universal programs are so hard to fight for. And so I do think part of, like, this upsurge in participation in movements and the left right now after this election of this horrible man is going to be trying to sustain that, keeping people involved, and then also making sure that the parts of the movement that are the deepest and that we really need the most get attention like they should. And I think we're starting to see that with the strike and putting women's voices directly out there, which has been really great.
Yeah. So on the website, you do say something about what men's involvement in the strike should be. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah. We have asked men to also pledge to strike. And in that, it means like doing more around the house and more of the work that women typically do so that women can be out there and strike. And fully participate in this political activism. So instead of men necessarily walking off their paid jobs, maybe it's doing more of the work that their female partners are doing in the home, or that their sisters are doing to take care of their parents, or, you know, picking up the kids, whatever that means, just putting in extra work so that women can be out there in the streets on these 2 days.
Yeah. And so, right, as you say, part of the value of a strike is it frees up people's time to do other things. So how do you envision this strike interacting with the women's march and other actions that are planned for Inauguration Day?
Yeah, we see it going hand in hand with that. So, you know, women are going to be out there at the march. I think for, you know, my friends that haven't even been politically active for the time that I've known them, they've really self-organized cars down to D.C. or meetup spots in New York City for the march. My family in Minnesota is going out. My sisters are going out for the first time, which has been pretty incredible. And so we see the strike as really a way to add to that march. So saying publicly, you know, what work you're striking from as you go to the march, or what demands you have as you are marching alongside women, whatever city you're in. And we are having specific meetup spots in places where women have pledged to strike, and in some places speaking out. But in anywhere, wherever people are in the country and have signed up to strike, we encourage people to go out to the march and march with other women as they're striking from this work.
Yeah. And so in terms of, obviously, if you're gathering pledges from people, you're gathering contact information, where do you see this sort of going? And is it a way to help build a national organization that can then, you know, take strike action or other actions when, for instance, Congress is voting on taking away our healthcare or something like that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's a way for us to gather contact info, get women's input and get their action and activism going, and then also be able to continue to fight for these demands. This is not something that's going to happen in just 2 days, right? This is a strong, bold action. We're sending a message of what women are willing to do and how far they're willing to go on day one of this administration. But it's going to take a lot more work, a lot more meetings, a lot more, you know, activism in between meetings and building to really win the things that we need to be free. And so this is building that in an organized way, like having contact information, having meetings in local cities, starting to build real movement, you know, and making this long lasting and persistent so that the energy that we have right now doesn't fade as we go into several months after this. We're planning immediately after the strike, just in concrete terms, to survey women about how it went and find out what parts of the organization they might want to get involved in afterwards, which one of the demands called to them and how they want to participate in that.
Yeah, excellent. So you, as your day job, is in the labor movement. And so has there been interest in this strike, from organized labor, from groups within organized labor, any outreach on that front?
Well, it is interesting that several of the women who are organizing the strike are also union organizers. So I do think we've taken some of the lessons from our paid work and, put into the feminist movement. And, in that way, I do think the labor movement is working with us and has been adding to the feminist movement. We haven't had unions necessarily sign on or send out the strike pledge, but we've definitely had a lot of women speak about their union activism as they've pledged to strike. So I think that the consciousness is affecting the militancy. I mean, I think we, on our strike website, in our meetings, we've talked about how, you know, women at Walmart, women in the fast food industry have been striking for years and taking bold action, and the impact that it's had on their working conditions and on the entire country in terms of raising the minimum wage and raising that consciousness. So I think it's had impact on us even calling the strike, and hopefully what we're striking for and what we're striking from, like this unpaid work that we're talking about and what we need, like paid parental leave, universal health care, you know, all of the things we do to pick up the slack have an impact on the labor movement and what they're fighting for. I do think that the feminist movement and the labor movement, you know, need to be working in a closer way, and also, like, hopefully raising the consciousness of women that are in unions and that are starting to be organized into unions will have an effect on the demands that are being brought at the table, right? Or what unions are fighting for politically, but it needs to go into the home as well, and a lot of the unpaid work and the slack that we pick up as women.
Yeah, it's interesting because this election season sort of revolved around jobs, but it revolved around many times a certain kind of job. So it revolved around factory jobs at the carrier plant or things like that. The sort of the idea of jobs that have been outsourced, whereas this is sort of forcing attention back on work that it's very hard to outsource. Right. A lot of women's work, you can't send it to China.
Yes, exactly. You can't send it to China, and our society wouldn't run if it wasn't being done. Now it's the invisible work of, like, what happens at 3 o'clock when school's over? You know, like, women are the ones going in and out of the workforce and not getting raises or not getting promoted or maybe, you know, losing their jobs because they have to do this sort of thing, you know, and that's work, real work that we're doing to make society run, to raise the next generation of people that will be, you know, in the workforce. Is that the, you know, working at the post office, working at the local store, you know, running whatever workplace is next. That's real work that makes our society run, is raising those kids, you know. And so the fact that that isn't being seen as a contribution to society and something that society should pay into is something that needs to change, you know. I mean, that's work that we need to start looking at, and start looking at in a way that the labor movement has an impact on.
I live in the Hudson Valley now, and so I remember seeing a Donald Trump ad with Ivanka Trump telling me that Donald Trump was going to give us paid family leave. This sort of idea, some of these ideas are really floating around there to the point where Donald Trump felt the need to try to co-opt them. But what do you think the odds are for actually pushing for some of these things, even under a Trump administration?
I have no illusions that any of this will be any easier under a Trump administration.
Yeah,
I think that
certainly.
It is exactly what you're saying, a co-option of what we've been calling for, and the fact that we've made these ideas so popular, and that also people are really at kind of a breaking point, not just in the U.S., but all across the world. I think that's why we're seeing this, like, rise in populism and people demanding a real change and break from what we normally see. I think it's going to be harder, much harder, to fight under Trump, and it can be a real battle, but I don't think that means that we should stop fighting. I think that we can raise a lot of consciousness, put a lot of women in the street, a lot of people in the street. I hope that we can change what our movements are fighting for, and fighting in a deeper, broader way, and that will go beyond just the next election cycle. You know, I do think that we need to build an independent movement like that that's not focused solely on electing the next Democrat, but is focused on building a movement that the elected officials really feel accountable to, no matter what party they're in. You know, I think it's going to be harder to do under a Trump administration because I think there's going to be a lot of repression. But I think that what we're seeing in terms of this upswell of people being involved is really one bright side, you know, and I think that if we can really grab onto that and get people involved in a long-term way and a persistent way that has political education, that is participatory and gets people involved in really long-term ways, that we can make something big and something real, and that we can win these programs. I do have hope in that way.
Yeah. Great. Anything else people should know about the women's strike?
You can sign up to strike at womenstrike.org, and we're still collecting pledges, and we hope that folks sign up to strike and list what you're striking from and add to our list of demands and get involved locally in your Women's March.
Thank you for listening. Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Fulibois and support from the Nation Institute. Thanks to all of our partner publications, The Baffler, The Progressive, Truth Out in These Times. You can find out more on the web at necessarytrouble.org and reach me there if you'd like to become a partner publication. We will be back soon.